It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
President Trump is taking a page out of his reality show days, announcing during primetime his pick for the vacant Supreme Court seat.
We're very close to making a decision.
How many people are you deciding between?
Well, it's still, let's say it's the four people, but they're excellent. Everyone, you can't go wrong.
Most Democrats would disagree. Going with an ultra-conservative judge to replace retiring Justice Anthony Kennedy could tip the balance of the court for decades.
If you look at what the president said, which is he will nominate someone only if that person is committed to automatically overturn Roe v. Wade. I've never seen a president of the United States, in effect, make himself a puppet of outside groups.
The top four judges were handpicked out of a group of 25 by a group of conservative lawyers called the Federalist Society. Judge Brett Kavanaugh, Raymond Kethledge, Thomas Hardiman, and Amy Coney Barrett. This crucial appointment has sparked concern with some that legalized abortion could be overturned. Kavanaugh has said he would follow Roe v. Wade fully. Barrett, more nuanced, saying she would not challenge precedent, but that she could envision the scope of abortion rights changing. Kethledge and Hardiman have never spoken publicly about their views on the matter.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has promised a Senate vote on the new Supreme Court nominee by the fall.
All right, that was ABC's report yesterday. This is Sandy Rios in the morning. Nice to be back in the seat. And of course, this is a momentous day. This is the day when the President of the United States announces his next pick for who will sit at the Supreme Court. And of course, I know ABC gave sort of a derisive setup, like that was his reality show approach to this. But you know what? This is not a reality show. This is real life. And this decision will affect the lives of every single American, present and future. And so just to give some idea, you know, it wasn't always true that the courts would make decisions that were just so outrageous. We had a constitution that kind of laid down the basis of our law and pretty much dictated that government stay out of people's lives as much as possible. And so we had then legislatures, you know, senates and state bodies of legislative bodies who would make decisions about things that were closer to the people, like how, you know, their roads, their highways, their public utilities, their services, their schools. Those were all supposed to be, you know, state decisions. And the federal government was not supposed to be making controlling decisions. It was supposed to be a small federal government because the founders did not want anything to assume any kind of similarity to the autocratic rule that King George and the monarchy presented. They wanted people to be free to pursue happiness, to pursue life and healthy happiness. It's just the Declaration of Independence is really the most beautiful document, and there's been no other like it in the history of the world. That's why when you think America has a unique history, we do. No one else has ever tried this before. I know the Greeks tried democracy. Our founding fathers decried democracy because pure democracy, they said, was nothing really more than mob rule. But democracy with a mix of republicanism, which meant that you had some form of representative government where a group of people were hired and elected by the people to full-time consider the questions of what things should be and how roads should run and how people should be protected and all those major decisions. Somebody could actually spend their time doing that while the people were working, raising their families, being productive citizens. And so this was kind of the platform of it. But what happened was as the left, meaning the political left, bubbled to the surface, they recognized that they could not get their stuff done through the legislature. The people didn't want what they wanted. People didn't want socialism. They wanted freedom. They wanted economic freedom. They wanted fair markets. They wanted to be free to work really hard. They wanted to be left alone to practice their faith or not practice it the way they wanted to. People really actually want to be free. I believe that's a song. And so the left figured out that the people wouldn't actually vote for the things that they wanted. So they plotted and planned and did a genius job of overtaking professional organizations of you name it, whether it's attorneys, teachers, any kind of professional organization. They co-opted their leadership. They began to strategize about how to get judges in place that embraced the view of the left. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was in my lifetime, the first appointee who was a rabid leftist. And interestingly enough, you know, the Republicans voted for her. I think she was voted into the court by like something like 98 votes. It seems to me it was in the 90s. Because the, you know, the right thought, well, it was just fair. You know, we'd have a balanced court. But the left had a different view of it. They thought, you know, if they could just get their people in the courts, they could have their way. And you know what? They were right. The left was right. And so in the process of all of this, they legalized abortion in 1973, which was shocking in our culture at that time. People didn't want, it was shocking. Abortion was not something that people were, there were some people lobbying for it, some feminists on the hard left, but most states were not even considering it, maybe half a dozen, maybe 10 or 12, you know, but it was a very small percentage. And so the court then jumps in, the Supreme Court jumps in and says, hey, listen, you know what? We decided that there's a right to privacy in the Constitution. We just found it. It's right here. Look. And that means that you can, if you want, you can kill your baby. You can do that. And as a matter of fact, not only can you can do that for when the baby's little in your womb, you can do it for all 9 months. That was Doe versus Bolton. Did you know that? In 1973, the Supreme Court decided you could have a baby terminated in your womb even through the ninth month was okay. And that's because radical judges had populated the Supreme Court, and radical judges then were populating the lower courts too, because the left was very smart about that. So I could go on and on about the decisions, couldn't I? And you could probably fill in the blanks of the number of ridiculous decisions that have come out of the courts that have, and because the legislatures have become weaker and weaker, spineless, more concerned about getting elected than actually doing what's right, then they rush. Yay, they are eager to let the courts decide everything. Because the courts have moved so far to the left, then we know that when it goes to the courts, we're in trouble. We're in trouble. We've seen so much injustice this last 30 years or so because of court decisions. But they aren't the will of the people. They are the will of the left. And they've made their voice heard to the courts. And that's why they are screeching loudly. They are scared to death that they're going to lose all of their gains. They're saying as much when people actually get in. And the goal is this. The goal is not to get judges who have a litmus test on their views about moral issues, but judges that swear an allegiance to the Constitution and to uphold the law passed by the legislatures, whether they're state or whether they are federal, to have fealty to that and honor of that, and not to decide because they just want to, like Justice Kennedy, decide that gay marriage should just, it just should be. And because it's not fair that gay people cannot marry. So I think I'll decide this. No, the idea is to have a justice that will actually look at the Constitution and base their decisions on that foundation, those foundational principles, nothing more, nothing less. And so we've been on a wild ride, shall we say, with these justices who had very different views of the world and actually had a very serious purpose to undermine and completely change and alter, take this country off of its trajectory. I remember Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been very public that she thinks the Constitution should be changed, should be altered. It's an outdated document. That's what most of them think. And so here we go. That's what's at stake with this. And so the left, of course, is very upset. They're very upset, and they want you to be upset. And they are whipping as much as they can the American people into a frenzy. I'll just give you a taste of what many, many Americans are hearing about this Supreme Court choice. Let's listen.
Everything is at stake when you're looking at the SCOTUS pick. Everything that we've worked for decades is at stake. Abortion, workers' rights, everything, same-sex marriage, LGBTQ rights.
What's the court going to look like for the next 30 years?
We're looking at a destruction of the Constitution of the United States, as far as I can tell.
This is a line that's been drawn about whether we are going to criminalize women.
This nomination could move the court in a really dangerous direction.
It's a very thin line between putting a woman in prison for a stillbirth or a miscarriage that she's blamed for something she did during her pregnancy, and criminalizing abortion.
So what's at stake are their constitutional rights, the protection against the abuses of power by the president, by Congress, by corporate America.
A justice that would reverse Roe. What happens? In essence, we go to 50 civil wars in each of the states plus the District of Columbia.
For instance, federal survivor benefits from Social Security, federal worker pensions could be lost.
They also want to criminalize abortion in this country. They're literally trying to punish women.
If he does pick a woman, she'll be known as the Aunt Lydia of the Supreme Court.
And I think the legacy that this president is creating really is turning back the clock 100 years.
But we are in an unparalleled moment of assault on the rule of law when our fundamental liberties are in danger.
Equal rights, equal freedoms, equal liberty.
Okay, you get the idea, right? And so this is what your neighbors are hearing, and they're being, you know, women are going to jail for choosing abortion. Did you know? Probably you'll be retroactive. If any of you who've had an abortion, you know, 30 years ago, you're probably going to jail too. I'm being facetious, of course, but this is really the frenzy which they're whipping people up on. Of course, none of these judicial candidates are going to be on a campaign to overturn Roe versus Wade. A case may be brought to the court that would challenge that, and that's the right of the people to bring those cases. And certainly pro-life groups will bring them. And if those cases happen to comport with the Constitution and Roe versus Wade, in fact, I remember Alan Dershowitz, who's the famous leftist attorney, said many years ago, I wish we had the clip with us, that Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided. It was a disaster. The decision was based on lies. If you knew the whole story of that, you would be appalled. But the left did everything they could. They twisted arms. They made up cases. They made up people. They made up facts. And they passed that law. And yet it's the sacred cow for the left. Nevertheless, there's a lot more at stake than even abortion. There is marriage. There's the rule of law. There's just the respect for law and order. There's the respect for the Constitution. There is a personal privacy. There is the ability to practice your faith freely. There are all kinds of Second Amendment rights. There's, I think, a few other things at stake besides just the potential overturning of Roe versus Wade. And so that's why these nominees are of such great interest to all of us. And I'm going to spend a bit of the show today trying to, as best I can, tell you who these candidates are. There are four top candidates right now. They are Brett Kavanaugh, Raymond Kethledge, Amy Coney Barrett, and Thomas Hardiman. All very interesting people. Thomas Hardiman, you may remember, he is the one who serves with President Trump's sister, Marianne Trump Barry, on the Third Circuit. I think it's in Pennsylvania. And so he was considered last time around, so he has now moved onto the list. And the others, they all have interesting pasts. My understanding is that, look, given the choices that we've had in the past, these are stellar. Yet some are better than others. And one, I think, is best of all. And I'm going to tell you who that is in a few minutes. So stay tuned, because this is a very big day in this country. And as you think about it, pray for the president. Pray for him, that God will give him wisdom, wisdom that's far above his abilities to discern. None of us know what the future holds, but we certainly know we need a person of integrity, someone who loves this country and will uphold its laws and its constitution. We do understand that. Well, this is Sandy Rios, and I'll be right back after this. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
Len Ingram of Redeem Clean felt God call him to support the American Family Association.
I'm a laundryman. I'm the son of a laundryman, too. I love clean clothes. I love the business. I love everything about it. This project was built exclusively to support AFA and AFR. There's no strings attached. Another thing that I would like to see come out of this is that I would like to see other business people feel a calling to support ministries, wherever and whatever they do to share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and get Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net. Come join Sandy Rios for a walk back in time when she was a young grieving mom, discovering firsthand how God's strength is made perfect in weakness.
I'll be the song for you. I'll be the symphony.
The music of Sasha's song, Sandy Rios' first album project, is a reminder of God's faithfulness.
Would God sustain us through the years?
Produced by John Innes of the Billy Graham Crusade with members of the Indianapolis Orchestra, this beautiful music will lift your heart.
Like peering through a window blurred with rain, emotions run together in a flood. Doubt and pain, for he is able.
Available on CD at afastore.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. There may be a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I've realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit Truett.edu today.
The new face of the Democrat Party is a 28-year-old socialist who wants to abolish ICE. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez stunned the political world by taking down Congressman Joe Crowley, the powerful 10-term incumbent in New York's 14th congressional district. Rolling Stone points out Ms. Ocasio-Cortez is to the left of Bernie Sanders. She campaigned on free Medicaid, free college tuition, legalizing illegals, and something called a universal job guarantee. She wants to mandate that every employer in the nation provide a minimum $15 an hour wage plus full health care. The only thing that would guarantee is universal unemployment. As I warned you in my book, The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again, the bigger story back in 2016 was the rise of socialism. And now we are watching the Democrats lurch to the far left, an untenable and unwinnable election strategy. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
In 2016, I'm going to play a quote of yours in September of 2016 about that, the other Supreme Court vacancy that we were dealing with back then. Here's what you said.
In a few weeks, the Supreme Court will start its new term with 8 justices. We need 9. Major legal questions are hanging in limbo because the court is deadlocked on 4-4 votes.
There's been some talk among some of your colleagues for Democrats to push for a delay until after the election. Obviously, you didn't like that in 2016. Where are you on this?
Well, I asked Senator McConnell when Kennedy made his announcement whether he was going to be consistent. He said during the course of the vacancy at the end of the Obama presidency, let's wait and let the people decide in an election. Many of his colleagues came to the floor on the Republican side and said, the people of this country are going to vote. They'll decide the future of the Supreme Court. Well, I asked McConnell, are you going to use the same standard this go-round? And obviously he is not. The net result of that, of course, is that we are going to move forward quickly to fill the vacancy, and I think it's pretty clear Senator McConnell was seizing the moment, stopping Obama from filling the vacancy with an extraordinary.
No, I understand that, but where are you on this now? Do you want it delayed? I understand you want to point out hypocrisy on McConnell's side, but there's hypocrisy on your side on this too, right? Do you think if it was wrong to delay in 2016, is it wrong to delay now?
Well, come on, Chuck, get real. Senator McConnell invented this.
I'm sorry. That's the famous Senator Dick Durbin from my home state of Illinois. You know, you have to know that Congressman Dick Durbin is just a consummate liar. I don't know what else to call it. He was one of the first when I realized that these guys really were like serial liars. He was one of them. I worked in the campaign. The candidate that opposed him, Al Salvi. Al was a great guy, and that was my first exposure to State Senator Dick Durbin, and I couldn't believe it. Was like when I got to D.C. later and started debating people on the left, like James Carville and others, that they were just, the lies just came out like so profusely, it was almost impossible to debate with them. Well, so that's kind of funny, because you heard Chuck Todd kind of play Dick Durbin's a statement that before Neil Gorsuch was nominated and the process went forward, Durbin was saying, you know, we don't need to hurry. We can get by with 8. We don't need 9. And now he's, of course, switching his tune. He thinks we should wait until the election to have a 9th Supreme Court justice. And so, of course, he's doing a turnabout. But when it's just, hey, the cleverness about that. So Chuck then plays his statement. And then he says, but now you're saying, and then Dick Durbin, rather than responding to that, which he couldn't, because he is obviously being hypocritical, that seems too kind of a word, he twists it to mean, oh, McConnell, yes, what a hypocrite he is. But now I have to hand it to Chuck Todd by coming back around and saying, oh, no, actually, Senator, I was talking about you. You're being hypocritical. Oh, get real, Chuck, because he has no answer to that. But that's the way it happens. If you don't really know what's going on, these guys will lie circles around you. It is kind of amazing. All right, but it's easy to mislead people because people are uninformed. And as a matter of fact, Campus Reform went out to interview college students about alleging to them that President Trump had already made the nomination, which he has not. He does that tonight. But let's just see what these college students said when they were asked, well, what do you think about that nominee for the Supreme Court that the President of the United States just made? Here is what it sounded like.
I think the big thing that's been in the news today, Supreme Court, Justice Kennedy stepping down. So there's a vacancy. All week people were worried about who it was going to be. This week he made his announcement. What's your reaction to the justice that he nominated today?
I'm honestly not surprised by his choice, but that's just worse for us.
I just saw the pick and I was like, it's almost at a point where you kind of expect that it's not going to be what you want.
He's quite, you know, extreme in his views, and I don't know if it would make the Supreme Court very even.
This new nominee is very racist, and I think it's starting a new wave of something very negative, and I'm really scared about what happened in the future and what choices he'll make.
So what reaction have you seen on social media today after the news?
Oh. Outrage, as it should be.
This is just a reoccurring thing. He keeps doing this with different positions and just doing whatever he wants, abusing his power.
Do you feel like his pick is an abuse of power?
Basically, yeah.
His entire cabinet and everyone he's chosen has been the white supremacist Legion of Doom, and it's dangerous to everyone who looks like me.
You feel like the Supreme Court nominee today kind of falls in that same line?
Of course. They should all wear white hoods and burn crosses at the Capitol, because that's exactly the move. That's what they're going for.
And the fact that he would pick someone...
You know what, that's up. They go on and on, you know. Yeah. Oh, yes, that nomination today that the president made. Of course, they're all lying, every single one of them. I mean, that's the thing that strikes me. Do they not honestly can't, even if they don't like the president, could they just say, you know what, I don't know about that. Oh, did he nominate someone? Who was it? No. They jump right on the Me Too bandwagon and have to, you know, criticize the imaginary candidate. It's really mindlessness, and that's why American people right now are easily misled. But I want to tell you as much as I can in the short time we have about these nominees, because there are four now. You remember that the president, when he was running, the Federalist Society, led by Leonard Leo, did a thorough search and created a list of 25 really good conservative candidates for President Trump, because there was some question as to really how conservative Donald Trump was. And would he really and truly end up appointing a conservative Supreme Court justice? Could we trust him to do that? And when the list of 25 was presented, the powers that be, the legal minds, said, wow, that's a great list. That is a great list. And it was out of that list that Neil Gorsuch was chosen. And, of course, some of the people that he's considering today, I guess maybe all of them, actually, were also on that list of 25. And so we did actually see then that the president meant business when he said he would appoint a Supreme Court justice in the mold of Justice Antonin Scalia, who had just died, which is still tragic, isn't it? Just still sad when I think about that. So here's the way it looks to me. The four are Brett Kavanaugh, Raymond Kethledge, and Amy Coney Barrett, Thomas Hardiman. I mentioned to you already, Thomas Hardiman is out of Pennsylvania. He has more of a blue-collar background. By that, I mean two judicial types. He doesn't have an Ivy League degree. I think he graduated from Georgetown, and somehow that's less than to the Ivy Leaguers. And others people feel that that's a good thing because he's a man of the people. I think he went to Notre Dame as well. He's 53 years old. He serves on the Third Circuit with Judge Marianne Trump Barry, which, of course, is the Donald Trump's older sister. He was a runner-up in the contest between Neil Gorsuch for that seat. Thomas Hardiman is supported also by Lou Barletta and Rick Santorum, who are both from Pennsylvania. They're lobbying hard that President Trump choose Thomas Hardiman. Then there's Brett Kavanaugh. Brett is a formerly clerked for Anthony Kennedy, who is the one who's stepping down, who serves on the court right now. He is serving on wouldn't be so common to those of you that aren't in D.C., but the D.C. Circuit Court is extremely powerful. President Obama really messed with the D.C. Circuit Court because he understood that. You see, all of these appeals to things that maybe are more federal, more national in interest come out of the District of Columbia. And it is that appeals court that gets to consider a lot of the things that affect all of us, even though it's a D.C. Circuit Court. So it has a lot more import, its decisions, than, say, the Third Circuit in Pennsylvania. So Brett Kavanaugh's been serving on there, I think, for 10-plus years. So he has a long paper trail, and that's what some people are concerned about. He is a favorite, as I understand it, of President Trump's White House legal counsel, Don McGahn. And the biggest concern that people have for Brett Kavanaugh is that he agreed with John Roberts. In fact, John Roberts perhaps got the idea from him that Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act was really not being forced on people in terms of making them buy something, but in fact redefined it as a tax. You remember when John Roberts did that? The Supreme Court Justice decided that it was a tax, and we were just all shocked. And because he declared it a tax, Obamacare stayed legal. I mean, that was a shocking moment for all of us. And most people in the legal circles believe that that idea came from Brett Kavanaugh. And so that's a huge concern. Also, Brett Kavanaugh seems to be one thing that people are concerned about is he was deeply involved with the Bush administration. He served as the legal counsel there. Well, that wouldn't normally be such a bad thing, except the Bushes are kind of the epicenter of the Never Trump movement. Sadly, I don't know how this happened, but it did. And they have really worked hard and spent a ton of money to undermine President Trump. There's no question about that. And as things have developed, we now know that the Bush family or the Bush people associated with the Bush movement, shall we say that, are pro illegal immigration. They are in many cases not, they just don't have the same conservative views that we thought they did. They just don't. We've got Mrs. Bush Sr., Barbara, and we have Mrs. Bush Jr., now Mrs. Bush Sr., of course, passed on, but advocating for abortion rights. Just not good things, not what we had hoped, not what we had believed, I think. And Brett Kavanaugh is being pushed by a lot of people that are just Never Trumpers. That's all there is to it. They cannot stand Donald Trump. So that makes people say, is that really a good idea? Won't that be a problem on some issues like immigration and other things? And so then we have Raymond Kethledge, who's the other person. He's also a former Anthony Kennedy clerk, which to my mind is not a bonus for anyone. You know, Anthony Kennedy has caused so many decisions to come down that have just been deadly, all the while smiling. He is like the quintessential make up the law person when it came to gay marriage and other rights associated with LGBT communities. Anthony Kennedy has just been a nightmare, really, for for constitutionalists and social conservatives. And so clerking for him is, to me, not a plus. That doesn't mean that they agree with him 100%, but it would be tough for me to work for someone, to be honest with you, who held the views that Kennedy held. But he serves on the, Kethledge serves on Cincinnati's U.S. Court of Appeals, the Sixth Circuit. He also, before this, worked for Senator Spencer Abraham, who was, he was the counsel to him. And in that regard, the paper trail or the history of Raymond Kethledge in terms of his decisions as a judge and also in his work for Spencer Abraham are, is not good for those of us that believe in the rule of law where immigration is concerned. Let's just say that Kethledge has, maybe saying a soft spot is really too kind, but when it comes to the rule of law, he has been very soft when it comes to illegal immigration. And we know that when he worked with Abraham, that Spencer Abraham was one of the people that want to enforce immigration law. He was one of the, a nightmare for us. He stopped all kinds of enforcement in any way he could, and Kethledge was his attorney who oversaw that. So that's a huge red flag for many of us. And then Thomas Hardiman, I already told you about, last but not least, is my pick, and that's Amy Coney Barrett. Amy is 46 years old. You heard her name. She was up for when... Neil Gorsuch was being considered. Amy Coney Barrett was also being considered. Later, she was nominated to be on the Chicago 7th District Court. She's a University of Notre Dame law professor. She clerked for Antonin Scalia, which to me is a high bar. That's something that, you know, that's a good thing, I think. Anytime you clerk for him, you've learned a lot and a lot of the right things. You might remember that Dianne Feinstein went after Amy Coney Barrett when she was being considered for this Seventh Circuit, and it was on her faith in Christ. Now, the words may not be familiar to you, but don't make no mistake. Dianne Feinstein was grilling Amy Coney Barrett on her what's purported to be her serious commitment to Christ and also to his principles. Let's hear what Dianne Feinstein had to say in grilling her.
Dogma and law are two different things, and I think whatever a religion is, it has its own dogma. The law is totally different. And I think in your case, Professor, when you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you. And that's of concern. When you come to big issues that large numbers of people have fought for years in this country, I assume that you would be a no vote on Roe. And that puts a number of us, just very honestly, in layman's language, in a very difficult position.
You know, she never said that she would be a no vote on Roe. I think she said that she would consider. She had to. None of them can say that. None of them can actually say legally. They should not say how they would adjudicate on any particular case. They shouldn't prejudge or state, if this ever comes up, I'll vote against it. They can't say that. But, you know, I've been in those hearings. And in the last, since I was at CWA in 2000, I went in 2001. It was amazing to me how Christianity, that was the one room, that Judiciary Committee meeting, where they could rake Christians over the coal for their faith. I found myself, it was hard for me to stay in my seat sometimes. The things that I heard from senators like Leahy and Durbin and Ted Kennedy at the time, just mocking and refuting and just in things that would appall you if you had known that was going on and a Judiciary Committee meeting, but they were. So Amy Coney Barrett is the most committed Christian, sounds like to me, on the list, but she has, you know, a great record in terms of her judicial decisions. It's a short one, but it's a good one. I'll be right back after this.
You hypocrites! You know how to interpret the appearance of earth and sky, but why do you not know how to interpret the present time? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders and her family were booted from the Red Hen restaurant in Virginia when the owner asked them to leave. The owner said her employees were uncomfortable because Sanders worked for President Trump, who supported banning transgender people from military service. Much like the dress designers who refused to provide dresses for Melania Trump, it seems regressives do support refusing services based on moral convictions, as long as regressivism reigns.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
You wish you could stop thinking about it, but you can't. It never quite leaves your thoughts. Even in the joyful moments, it's there. The sadness, shame, and sorrow. You know you can't go on like this, so don't. Phone the International Helpline for Abortion Recovery at 866-482-LIFE. Your call is confidential, and you'll be talking with someone who's already been where you are and found the way out. 866-482-LIFE.
Are you caring for a vulnerable loved one? Maybe a special needs child or an aging parent? Or a spouse with a disability? Did you know that more than 65 million Americans are currently serving as a family caregiver? And the challenges can be brutal. I know, I've been a caregiver for more than 30 years. I'm Peter Rosenberger, and I host the nation's number one radio program for family caregivers. And we're thrilled to now be broadcasting live every Saturday morning at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
Netflix continues to ignore the outcry about 13 Reasons Why. The American Family Association, along with Parents Television Council and several other pro-family groups, have reached out to the streaming service, urging the cancellation of their program. Netflix has not even responded to our letter. Instead, they released an even more vile Season 2 and are producing Season 3. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings says their program is engaging and that it fosters discussion of taboo topics like suicide and sexual assault. But at what cost? 14-year-old Anna Bright and several other teens have committed suicide after watching the show. Hastings calls our objections propaganda. Does he feel the profitability of his company is worth more than the lives damaged or lost because of his show? Please sign our petition to Netflix, learn more, and share our action alert when you visit AFA.net. And pray Reed Hastings will recognize the dangers of 13 Reasons Why.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Preoccupation with Donald Trump's next Supreme Court nominee contributed to a virtual news blackout last week concerning a terrible miscarriage of justice. Unless rectified, the Washington swamp will get away with covering up one of our nation's most potentially explosive political scandals. The Daily Caller's Luke Rosiak has exposed what sure looks like a Pakistani intelligence operation that gained access to the personal and official correspondence and other sensitive information of dozens of Democratic legislators. Lawmakers thus exposed declined to press charges, and the Justice Department enabled their cover-up, ignoring massive evidence of the Awan family's criminal conduct and even espionage, and allowing the ringleader off with probation for a single charge of bank fraud. The Republican leadership has been complicit in deep-sixing this scandal. Anyone implicated has betrayed the public trust and disqualified themselves from further responsibility for running the House. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Okay, so it's Sandy Rios back with you. I just want to finish up on this discussion because I want you to have a good understanding as things unfold today of what's happening. Amy Coney Barrett has like six kids. She is a stellar candidate. She would be my choice based on her, her history and the way she stands on issues. Yeah, I would vote for her. I think the other guys, Raymond Kethledge, I would be concerned about his past decisions regarding immigration. I think that's a huge problem. I would be concerned about Brett Kavanaugh's links to the Never Trumpers. I would be concerned about his decision that Obamacare was a tax, which is what John Roberts mimicked. And I would be concerned about Thomas Hardiman because my understanding is that he is doesn't have as conservative a record as some of the others do on the court. So Amy Coney Barrett would be my choice. Let me just say that she was confirmed just a few months ago. She's been serving, maybe it's been a year, something like that. She's been serving on the Seventh Circuit in Chicago. And at the time that she was confirmed, she got 54 votes in favor, 42 opposed, and 4 did not vote at all. I think that was October 2017. Now, here's the breakdown on this, though. There's no question that this is going to be a tough fight. There are some things I see as a fight that have not even been mentioned. Let me mention the obvious ones. First of all, even though Mitch McConnell has 50 people in the Republican caucus, he doesn't really have 50 people in the Republican caucus because you've got Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, who are both pro-choice, very strong supporters of Planned Parenthood. How did that happen, by the way? Well, they are there, and they are already threatening that if any of these nominees say that they will overturn Roe versus Wade, they will not support them. Now, what that's going to do to Amy Coney Barrett's nomination, I don't know, because we know that Amy's, she has not said, nor have any of them, that they would overturn Roe versus Wade. As I said, no judge should ever declare that. They have to wait and see what case comes before them. And then, you know, it might come before her and be a terrible case and not be constitutional. She might end up voting to continue with Roe versus Wade. You never know what the twist of things is going to be. So, but that's what the snag is. And so Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski are being targeted by the left, on the issue of abortion. So we'll see what they do then. But that's not all. You've got John McCain, who's like not there, refusing to relinquish his seat because, as I understand it, he wants his wife to have his seat. He wants to control who's going to take it over next. So he doesn't really care that he's not there to vote and have his voice be heard. Doesn't care that the margin between Democrats and Republicans are so small. That doesn't really matter, because what matters is really what he wants, because he wants to have his way, and he's having it. So he won't be there to vote at all. And then, of course, there's Jeff Flake, who I've heard no one mention, but I don't know if you realize, but Jeff Flake has been holding up President Trump's nominees ritually. He's been doing that for the last 2-3 weeks, so for maybe a month. Just wants to be an obstructionist, just doesn't want them to go through. Just whatever he can do to hurt President Trump. He is the ultimate never Trumper. So I really don't think, honestly, he's not going to come back. He's not running again. I just don't think we can count on his vote either to vote on a good candidate. I just don't think we can. And then, of course, you have three Democrats who are in trouble. Because I believe that Heidkamp, Manchin, and Donnelly, Heidkamp from North Dakota, Manchin from West Virginia, and Donnelly from Indiana, all voted for Amy Coney Barrett when she was confirmed a year or so ago. But now what happens? You know, they're in states, of course, that went for Donald Trump, and they are in tough reelection fights. But the pressure from the party on them, this is a decision that's going to influence the country for decades to come. So just, what are they going to do here? Heidi Heitkamp, Joe Manchin, Joe Donnelly, that's three. And then you've got Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, John McCain, and Jeff Flake, and that's four that I don't think you can count on. It really is going to be interesting. Of course, Mitch McConnell, it will not surprise you that he's encouraging the president to choose the two easiest to get through the process, that wouldn't have those icky kinds of records or wouldn't be those icky, strong Christians who might be hard to get through. So he's recommending, I think, Kavanaugh and Hardiman as the two top picks. We'll see. I don't know. You know, it'd be interesting to see what the president does today. You know, he's not predictable. Did you know that? He's not predictable. So we really have no way of telling. Another really big story broke last week, and I wasn't here to talk to you about it, and I have to. We have to discuss this because I think it has been covered very, very poorly. I'll let Mike Emanuel tell the story, which at least begins it, and I'm going to fill in a lot of the blanks. Here he is, Mike Emanuel.
There are now five former Ohio State wrestlers accusing Republican Congressman Jim Jordan of knowing about a team doctor's alleged sexual misconduct. Jordan was an assistant wrestling coach at Ohio State more than 20 years ago. Fox has reviewed some of the emails written by former wrestler Mike DiSabato to Jordan, including this one from June 15th. Reverend James, the squeaky clean U.S. congressman from Urbana, who does not recall systemic sex abuse, a once-to Speaker of the House despite his apparent lack of knowledge of systemic sex abuse. He concluded a May 6th email with hashtag rape cover-up, a way of life. DeSabato told Fox he sent the emails to Jordan to help him realize he needed a lead on what he suggests was common knowledge.
It was an uncomfortable joke that Doc would and wanted to give you a genital exam every time you saw him.
Jordan denies being aware of sexual abuse. He says the timing of the attacks is suspicious.
It's right after the big hearing with Mr. Rosenstein. It's right when there's all this talk about a speaker's race. The law firm who was doing the investigation said they tried to contact us and we didn't respond. We have no record.
Emails obtained by Fox show that law firm tried contacting him at jim.jordan@mail.house.gov, which his office says is a non-existent account. The congressman received full support from President Trump on Air Force One late yesterday. Quote, Jim Jordan is one of the most outstanding people I've met since I've been in Washington. I believe him 100%. With lawmakers out of town, it's been pretty quiet. But next week, Jordan's colleagues will be fielding many questions about the congressman and this controversy.
All right, then he goes on to Jim Jordan then was on with Brett Baer, and they had quite a long exchange. I'm not sure I'll have a chance to play all of it today. I'd like to. I want to come back to this because there are so many holes. This was an NBC story that broke last week. I read it, and I thought, are you kidding me? The main accuser, this DeSabato, is in prison. He's serving time for fraud. The other accuser, he's also accused of running a fraudulent operation against a Marine widow, a guy who was killed, I believe, in Fallujah, someplace in the Middle East, serving our country. And this wrestler who's accusing Jim Jordan was trying to get the money that she had received, trying to get her to invest it in one of his enterprises, and she wouldn't do it. And so he threatened her. There's a long list of things that he has done that's public record. When Brett interviewed him, he talked about these six accusers or seven or whatever. And the thing that they accuse him of is that Jim Jordan wasn't even the head coach. He was the assistant coach then. It's interesting to me that they're not accusing the head coach. They're accusing the assistant coach. And the accusation is this. He must have known. He had to have known that wrestlers were going in and that this doctor was touching them inappropriately. Jim Jordan, he must have known. That's the damnation. That's the thing that they claim. He must have known. And of course, you wonder then why these wrestlers, this has been what, it was 20 years ago, 30? The doctor himself killed himself like 12 years ago. The doctor that's at the center of all of these accusations. So now suddenly this is being investigated, and just suddenly at this time when Jim Jordan is throwing his hat into the ring to be Speaker of the House and has become a leader in these investigations against these investigations of the mishandling of so-called Russian collusion by the FBI, by the Justice Department, Jim Jordan is the most articulate, the one bulldog, really, in the Freedom Caucus that's out there. And now suddenly these accusations, and the accusation isn't that he did know, not that he participated, not that anything's documented, is that he must have known. He must have known. How dare he? He must have known. And it's the accusations is coming from men who are not trustworthy. And by the way, could I just say that there's a whole list of former coaches, wrestlers, and colleagues who are coming out in Jim Jordan's defense. But this was all coming at him last week. And then we find out, this is the kicker, and even NBC mentions this toward the end of the article, and this is what really caught my eye. Do you know what law firm is conducting this investigation? Anybody want to guess? Well, it's a law firm known as Perkins Coie, based in D.C. Does that ring a bell, anyone? Well, let's see. Perkins Coie just happens to be the law firm. Now, this is the law firm conducting this investigation of Ohio State, and this doctor who's been dead 12 years, doesn't seem like of the coach, but of Jim Jordan, because he must have known, of course, that this doctor touched boys in ways he shouldn't. These who are not children, they're boys. Like if they were could I just interject? I don't understand why, if something was happening like that, they didn't just come forward then. Why now? And then loop Jim Jordan into it? But it's Perkins Coie that's investigating this, and the reason the name might sound familiar to you is that Perkins Coie is the very law firm that represented the DNC, the Democratic National Committee. Perkins Coie is the law firm that represented Mrs. Clinton's campaign, Hillary Clinton for president. Perkins Coie is the law firm that made happen the phony dossier against President Donald Trump. So now Perkins Coie, of course there's no connection. No, how could there be a connection? This is just happens to be that they find themselves in Ohio investigating, and it just so happens that Jim Jordan used to be an assistant wrestler there. And it just so happens that, Jim Jordan is the bulldog on these issues. He's the bulldog in Congress. He is the man most discussed, I think, about becoming the next Speaker of the House. And isn't this just perfect? Isn't this just perfect? Well, Jim Jordan was a broken man when he talked to Bret Baier on Fox. It really bothered me a lot. I've never seen him less articulate. But there was a reason that he married. His son's wedding was last week while this was happening. And then also his nephew, who was involved in the wrestling program, was killed in a car accident just the night before he's with Bret. So, and he's just stunned and hurt that these wrestlers would turn against him. Let's just hear a little bit about what Congressman Jim Jordan had to say. Let's listen to clip 10.
We are now joined by Congressman Jordan. First time dealing with all of this in detail. Good evening, Congressman.
Good evening.
You heard that report. Yeah. You've seen the reports in recent days. Your reaction first to all of this.
It's false. I mean, I never saw, never heard of, never was told about any type of abuse. If I had been, I would have dealt with it. Our coaching staff, we would have dealt with it. These were our student athletes. A good coach puts the interests of his student athletes first. We would have dealt with it if we'd have known about anything that happened. If in fact there are victims, they deserve justice. There's an investigation going on. We're gonna, I think, meet with them next week. We want the investigation to get to the truth. That's what we need here is the truth.
All right, take a listen to DeSabato from one of the statements he made earlier this week.
I know Jim knew about what I call the deviant sexual atmosphere that we were exposed to.
How do you know?
Well, we all had conversations. Jim was more like a big brother than a coach. It was something that we would discuss on a regular basis, mainly with nervous banter, locker room banter.
Now there are five, at least five. One Politico was saying there's six. Where are these guys coming from?
Conversations in a locker room are a lot different than allegations of abuse or reported abuse to us. I mean, I've been around the sport of wrestling my entire life. Kids wrestling, junior high wrestling, high school wrestling, University of Wisconsin, coached at Ohio State. I got two boys who wrestled for the Badgers. I got four nephews who wrestled at Ohio State, another nephew who wrestles for Iowa. Conversations in a locker room are a lot different than people coming up and talking about abuse. No one ever reported any abuse to me. If they had, I would have dealt with it. And what bothers me the most is the guys that are saying this thing, I know they know the truth. I know they do.
Well, that was at least a portion of that interview, and if I have a chance, I'm going to play more of it tomorrow because there's more to say. The attorney leading the smear against Jim Jordan served under Pat Fitzgerald, who happens to be Jim Comey's attorney presently. It really is a scandal. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.